Welcome to Groundwater, community radio news, brought to you by volunteers at Canada's community radio stations. This episode of Groundwire was produced on the unceded territory of the Mohawk and Algonquin peoples in Montreal. I am your host, Gretchen King. In this episode...
Yeah, I wake up in the morning and my neighbor's just gone. People came in the night and took her away. And I don't want to live in a city where that kind of thing can happen.
The idea that at the 11th hour, the rug be pulled out from under the Manitoba Métis Federation based upon them relying on a negotiated agreement with a crown corporation is simply unconscionable.
They call us terrorists for waving a flag, for demanding basic human rights, for minding our own business, picking parsley in our farms.
But first up, here are the headlines. Our first headline comes from Co-op Radio in Vancouver. Marge joined host Gennarji O'Sullivan in Co-op Radio's studio the day before she would testify in the proceedings for the National Inquiry on Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. Marge told the story of the murder of her sister, Cheryl, and shared her hopes for participating in the ongoing national inquiry.
It was my sister Cheryl that was murdered, and it was actually a double murder. Her common-law husband was murdered as well. So I stand for both the women and the men, and I feel really... Honestly, right now I feel okay, and for what I'm gonna be doing, it's a big I call it as blocks, how we're doing all this work in blocks, and you know, for the inquiry, for everything, but this is the biggest block that we are gonna stand on, and I want nothing but resolution, resolve, and healing. Just really big healing.
Thanks to Gennarji for that headline. The following headline comes to us from Michael Welch of the University of Winnipeg-based radio station CKUW 95.9 FM. In Winnipeg, the annual 7th Generation Walk for Mother Earth will once again be taking place. This Indigenous-led effort marks a 15-year commitment by environmental and Indigenous solidarity activists in Winnipeg to cement a commitment not only to environmental stewardship, but solidarity and righting relationships with Indigenous communities affected by ongoing natural resource plundering and extractive industries. Suzanne McCrae was one of the founding members of the walk and a longtime activist with the Friends of Grassy Narrows in the Indigenous People's Solidarity Movement.
We started this walk in conjunction with the blockade at Grassy Narrows. This started as a sacred walk, and that we met up with the walkers at the perimeter and walked them into the city. And the idea was to get everybody together in one place with supporters, allies, so that we could hear Indigenous voices and so that people could network together with other communities and realize that the same kinds of things were happening in many communities and that people could support one another and not be isolated. So this was the vision that was brought to us by the women who started this walk. So it's, to me, it's a sacred day, and it's very important to me that we do an alternative to the Corporate Earth Day, which we protested primarily for years because of things like corporate sponsorship.
The event this year starts Sunday, April 22nd at 1 p.m. with a gathering and speakers at St. John's Park in Winnipeg's North End, and will proceed down Main Street to the Odina Circle at the Forks, where there will be a water ceremony and picnic. For more information, visit the Facebook page 7th Generation Mother Earth Day Epic 15th. That's it for headlines. We'll be right back after this. You're still listening to Groundwire, broadcasting community radio news from coast to coast to coast. Since 2008, Groundwire has been on air, produced and distributed by an experienced team of community radio news volunteers. The national coordination team is seeking new members of all experiences who who would like to join in the collaborative production of Canada's only syndicated community radio news program. Groundwire is an award-winning program produced bi-weekly by and for community radio stations. Groundwire is a reliable, high-quality newscast dedicated to grassroots coverage, offering social justice views on issues that engage local and national audiences. Groundwire's priority is to connect diverse communities from coast to coast to coast and encourage self-representation. With this volunteer position, Groundwire offers an excellent opportunity to network at a national level with community media journalists and community radio stations across Canada. Join the Groundwire National Coordination Team. Visit www.groundwirenews.ca and click on Contribute for details. Now it's time for our feature stories. CKUT Radio in Montreal brings Groundwire this special feature on the struggle to stop the scheduled deportation of Lucie Francine Granados. Lucie, a community organizer and 9-year resident of Montreal, was brutally arrested in late March and since then has been held in jail and is now facing deportation.
Stop, stop, stop! Solidarité! Avec! Avec!
On March 20th at 6 a.m. in the morning, the Canadian Border Police, CBSA, brutally detains Lucie Francinette Granados, locking her up in a detention center at Laval. Originally from Guatemala, Lucie is the sole financial provider for her 3 children who still live back in her home country. 9 years ago, Lucie traveled alone to Canada on La Bestia, an infamous train where many immigrants have died. Her refugee application was denied when she initially applied soon following her arrival, but Lucie decided to remain in Canada as an undocumented worker. Summer 2017, Lucie filed a humanitarian application for permanent residency in an attempt to regularize her legal status. January 2018, she was informed that her file would not be studied unless she turned herself in to immigration authorities. It was when she and her lawyer refused that CBSA officers forcefully entered her home and violently arrested her. According to Canadian law, all humanitarian applications filed from within Canada must be considered. CBSA denied Lucie's right to lawful consideration. Her deportation was scheduled for March 27th.
Lucie is a friend of mine, and she actually lives down the street from me. To me, it's just really disturbing that the idea that one day I wake up in the morning and my neighbor is just gone. People came in the night and took her away, and I don't want to live in a city where that kind of thing can happen. So that's why I want the mayor to intervene. I want the ministers to stop the deportation, and I want her application that she's already put in to be accepted.
Monday, March 26th, however, it was announced that Lucie's deportation would be postponed until further notice. This decision was due to Lucie's sudden hospitalization from the detention center. According to friends and the Immigrant Workers Center, Lucie's health deteriorated significantly during her detention because of stress, harassment, poor nutrition, and lack of sleep. One of our members, Julia, asked Bill from Solidarity Across Borders about the conditions at the detention center.
Well, it's a prison in Laval, and it's located amongst the prison complex along with other penal institutions like men's minimum facility, a medium security facility. There's a few prisons in that little complex there. The official name for the Immigration Detention Center is actually the Center for the Prevention of Immigration, which is very telling. You know, I know that other prisoners from other prisons, they actually come in and they'll do like grounds work and other kind of labor like that in Immigration Detention Center. And even amongst those prisoners who are in for like criminal matters and stuff like that, I know amongst them that the Immigration Detention Center has the reputation for being the worst place. Part of it is that there's no services. There's nothing like that. And to me, one of the things that's really disturbing about it, if you ever get the chance to go out there, you'll see, if you look around on the grounds, you'll see this child's playground surrounded by fences with barbed wire on top of it. because, of course, they detain whole families there, including children.
A press conference was held on April 5th to declaim the inhumane treatment and abuse of power experienced by Lucy during the period of her detention.
Friends and healthcare workers have gathered here today to detail the devastating consequences that detention has had on the physical and mental health of Lucy Francinez-Cardanos. They are also here to denounce the harassment and mistreatment that she has suffered at the hands of the CBSA. We are also here today to announce that a complaint is being prepared for the Human Rights Commission detailing the harassment she has suffered at the hands of the CBSA, as well as the very real ways in which this has violated her rights. On March 20th, 2018, four CBSA agents presented themselves to Ms. Granado's home and arrested her. According to her, she was arrested with unnecessary and disproportionate physical force, with at least one CBSA agent grabbing her left arm and her neck forcibly, resulting in their injury. When I interviewed her, she wore a sling on her left arm and could not move it during the interview. She proceeded to show me the injury on her neck while crying. There was a 10 centimeter diameter bruising and swelling at the back of her neck, which was still evident 5 days after the arrest. Since then, Ms. Granados has been having flashbacks of her arrest. She has intrusive images and thoughts of that incident, causing her to experience marked anxiety, including physical symptoms such as sweating and trembling, as confirmed by her roommates. Her sleep quantity and quality is markedly impaired. She states that she has barely slept in the past 5 days. She has vivid dreams that cause her to wake up in panic, occasionally causing her roommate to wake up. Upon waking up at night, she reports high hypnopompic hallucinations, hearing someone calling her name and perceiving the shadow of what she thinks is a CBSA agent outside her door. It takes her a few seconds to realize that these are actually not true. She has not been able to experience any positive emotions. She is repeatedly crying and states that her appetite is almost absent. Her difficulty concentrating persists. She is hypervigilant and easily startled. The psychiatrist concluded that Ms. Granados is suffering from an acute stress disorder. Approximately half of people with an acute stress disorder progress to developing a post-traumatic stress disorder. Symptoms often worsen as a result of ongoing life stressors. We believe that it is clear on the basis of this evaluation that ongoing detention and deportation will likely have serious consequences for Lucy's well-being, as well as by extension that of her children. Lucy's emotional well-being began to deteriorate after 2012 when her refugee claim was refused as a result of the precarious situation she was living in. Her symptoms increased significantly following a call that she received from a CBSA agent in January 2018, where the agent informed Lucy that her application for permanent residency on humanitarian and compassionate grounds, which is in fact the only way, means by which she can regularize her status, would not be opened unless she turned herself in to face potential arrest and deportation.
The medical report was sent to Minister Ahmed Hussein, as well as other government officials. However, no interventions or actions have been taken yet so far. My name is Sejong Park, from CKUT 90.3 FM.
Thanks to CKUT for that report.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. You're listening to Groundwire, grassroots news from coast to coast to coast.
In Manitoba, actions by the government of Progressive Conservative Premier Brian Pallister has triggered a mass resignation at the board level of the province's most important Crown utility, along with generating concerns about the future of relationships with the Métis and other Indigenous peoples impacted by that utility historically. Michael Welch of University of Winnipeg-based radio station CKUW brings us the details.
On Wednesday, March 21st, Manitobans received the shocking news that 9 out of 10 members of the Manitoba Hydro Board of Directors had resigned. By the end of the week, the Progressive Conservative government of Premier Brian Pallister had assigned new directors to fill those vacant slots. In a statement, outgoing chair Sanford Riley claimed that the board had not had a face-to-face meeting with Premier Pallister since October of 2016 to resolve multiple issues involving the governments and finances of Manitoba Hydro, including resolving long-standing concerns in developing relations with the province's Indigenous peoples. The premier subsequently denied the charge of a lack of consultation with the board and claimed that the mass resignations were in relation to a $67 million payment to be paid to the Manitoba Métis Federation over 50 years, what the premier described as persuasion money intended to facilitate the process for developing a transmission line into Minnesota. Former Hydro Board Chair Riley described this depiction of events as cynical, offensive, and wrong. The actions and statements from the premier triggered a strong reaction from the MMF. As of March 28th, it had announced it was launching legal proceedings against the Palliser government, referring to an agreement between Manitoba Hydro, the MMF, and the Manitoba government in November of 2014. The MMF's legal team argued that the provincial government had violated its constitutional and legal duties. Jason Madden is a Métis lawyer on that team. He's recognized as being at the forefront of advancing Métis rights in Canada.
And what's important about that agreement is the honor of the crown infuses into it. It is signed by the government as well as a crown corporation, and the Manitoba Métis decided to not proceed with appeals of the Bipole 3 project as well as appeals of other projects because this agreement set a new course and a way to resolve these issues through negotiations rather than litigation. And 3 years subsequent, an agreement based upon the delegated authority that was provided to Manitoba Hydro by the Crown, i.e. the Manitoba government, was reached in July 2017. And that agreement addressed future projects as well as the Bipole 3 project. And it's not until the mass resignation of the Hydro Board in March 2018 that the Premier then points to this agreement with the MMF as the reason to for those resignations, and that they say that they're going to overturn that agreement. And I think that what the Premier fails to recognize is these agreements are common industry practice, but what's more important is that the honor of the crown is implicated in the government's actions. And the idea that at the 11th hour, the rug be pulled out from under the Manitoba Métis Federation based upon them relying on a negotiated agreement with a crown corporation is simply unconscionable.
Hydroelectric power has long been seen as a clean energy alternative to fossil fuel energy, but this view underestimates the impacts of hydro production on the environment and particularly on northern and indigenous communities. Laura Tyler is spokesperson for the Manitoba Energy Justice Coalition.
Like, that's one example. With the rising and falling of the water levels, there's all kinds of eroding going along the shorelines, and so trees are falling into the rivers and lakes, which is making it very dangerous for the fishermen to go out on their boats. And then there's also just the fact that there are fisheries that used to be able to support hundreds of workers and now can barely support 100. And so that's like pretty intense when you think about the impacts of not only on the livelihoods of people, but also just on food security. Like, how are people going to be feeding themselves? I mean, we're just really concerned, and this concern is shared by other organizations, that we're not seeing the representation of people who are living the life, who are from the communities where this electricity is being produced. And that's just like a critical voice that should be included in decisions. And so it just was a really, with the board resigning, it was a really great opportunity to increase the participation and the profile of those voices. And it was just really disappointing to see Manitoba Hydro not taking advantage of that opportunity to get the wisdom and the lived experience around that table.
From Winnipeg, on Occupied Anishinaabeakin, the homeland of the Métis and the traditional territory of the Nahiyawak and the Nakota, this is CKUW's Michael Welch for Groundwire.
You're still listening to Groundwire. Our final feature comes from CKUT Radio in Montreal.
Free, free!
Palestine!
Free, free!
Palestine!
Free, free!
Palestine!
Last Friday, Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights organized a vigil at McGill University in response to the Israeli Defense Forces shooting and killing 9 violent protesters from the occupied Gaza Strip seeking to return home to Palestine. calling for participants to remember the names and stories of those killed, the students gathered on McGill campus in Montreal shared stories of the Palestinians killed by the Israeli army and read out their names.
Amin Mahmoud Muammar, age 38. Mahmoud Saadi Rahdi, age 33. Shihad Freina, age 33. Omar Wahid Abu Samur, age 31. Faris Al-Raqid, age 29. Muhammad Abu Omar, age 22. Badr Faik Al-Sabbagh, age 20. Ibrahim Abu Shar, age 20. Ahmed Oda, age 19. Abdul Fattah Abdul Nabi, age 19. Sari Walid Abu Oda. Hamdan Ismail Abu Amsha. Shihad Suhair Abu Jamus. Naji Abu Hajji. Muhammad Kamil Najja. Wahid Nasrallah Abu Samur. Abdul Qadir Marhi Al-Hawajri.
So you participated in the demonstration today. Tell us about your participation. You read something aloud. What was that?
Yeah, I prepared a piece about a man that died named Muhammad Abu Omar, who was a sand sculpture artist in Gaza that died. He was 22 years old. And so I prepared a piece about him. And then I read a Mahmoud Darwish poem titled On This Land to explain the significance of the land and why it's important that Palestinians get the right of return.
This was followed by a moment of silence. And then one demonstrator read aloud a letter written by a Palestinian student from McGill University.
Hi, my name is Andrew, and I'm a Palestinian-American student studying here at McGill. To my deep sadness, I could not be present today at the vigil, but I wanted to leave these words with you because I'm feeling very tired and very outraged. I am tired of paying my tuition fees to a school which invests student dollars into the occupation of my homeland. I am outraged because 770 unarmed people were shot in Gaza and 15 are dead. I am outraged because when we try and organize a vigil to mourn these lives, we receive threatening messages telling us that this is our fault, that it's all our fault. They call us terrorists for waving a flag, for demanding basic human rights, for minding our own business, picking parsley in our farms. I'm outraged.
This report was produced for Groundwire by Gretchen King from CKUT Radio, broadcasting in Jojage, otherwise known as unceded Mohawk territory. That's it for our feature stories. We'll be right back after this.
The odds, you're in a trance. Say, who did you think you are to have a chance? You're a no one from a place where everyone knows your face. Come and go in and all the sun. So you better hang on and hey, you better run. Cause here's your chance and your race is begun.
to run.
You just heard Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak with You Got to Run. Welcome back to Groundwire, available bi-weekly online at www.groundwirenews.ca. Now it's time for our community radio report. On April 22nd, community radio stations and listeners are invited to celebrate Earth Day by tuning in to a 24-hour special broadcast by Co-op Radio in Vancouver. The second annual wetland broadcast will carry sounds from a Saturna Island wetland.
Celebrate Earth Day with the second annual wetland broadcast on Sunday, April 22nd. Connect your everyday activities to the circadian rhythms of a Saturna Island, British Columbia marsh. The voices of the wild creatures, frogs, birds, insects, and their environment take over the airwaves for this 24-hour experience in slow radio, created by artists Brady Marks and Mark Timmings.
The slow radio broadcast is presented by Vancouver Cooperative Radio, the CRES Media Arts Committee, and with support from the Canada Council for Arts in the City of Vancouver. Stations across Canada are participating, including CFRO in Vancouver, CJMP in Powell River, CILU in Thunder Bay, and CJRU in Toronto.
Crack open a virtual window and hear the sounds at exactly the same time as they occur in the wetland. April 22nd, all day, Earth Day. To learn more, visit wetlandproject.com.
That's it for this edition of Groundwire, produced on traditional Mohawk and Algonquin territory in Montreal. We thank all of our contributors this week. Music this week was by Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Tune in again to hear Groundwire on your local community radio station or download at groundwirenews.ca.